Okay, Bill, I'm stranded in traffic, so I would like you to play all kinds of ION stuff that's on the green board there for about 25 minutes, and then I'll be home, so I'll be able to do the show properly. And if, no, we'll leave it at that. Okay, Bill, so I'm listening to see if you start playing, say, recordings, and once I hear them start, I assume you got it. Play whatever you want. Pick the longer ones.
This is Bob. Stranded in traffic.
And you can have that experience. Okay? The same way that if one spouse slips away, then it's not long before the other does. But then sometimes husbands can die and women are now happy and they live 30 or 40 more years after the fella. That's just they're reassessing their place of creating, you see. And from non-physical, nobody cares because there is no time, so it doesn't matter. It's, okay, 5 more minutes and you'll be here, honey. That might be 50 years. Doesn't matter, you see, from the transcension. That's the word, transcension. It's ascension. It's a transferring from the cohesiveness, and to call it a transcension.
That's more appropriate than ascension.
That is exactly correct.
Now, Carolyn came up with a point today. Things that are being deposited in Egypt by future terrestrials, dropping things in the Valley of Kings. Carolyn supposed, before she had any chocolate, she supposed this. She said, Bob, ask Ion if are we depositing these artifacts in the Valley of the Kings? And that's the question I pose.
Yes.
It's because we know it. That's why only those who know it, that it's possible, Carolyn, could do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, then you're screwed, Bob, because if we laid that out for you, you'd go, nah, we ain't put nothing in Egypt. Everything in Egypt has just been sitting there. Typical sandbox. Why would you waste it over there? You got all this stuff. Why would you go bury it under the ground and all this kind of foolishness? And then those mausoleums and people putting people in them under them pyramid business. That's the foolishest thing I've ever seen in my life. So, you know, yes, but yes, it's a flow. You can only ask that question. You can only ask that question not understanding the engulfing of the largeness of your being. See, when you get to the largeness, when you have to delineate between a past, a present, and a future, and there's not that.
That's right. And I was thinking, like, it's interesting, Karen brought up today, but it was last night I was sitting here thinking while listening to Ion that I was in Egypt. Mm-hmm. I see, in the largeness of myself. So if you're so large, then you are creating everything.
Well, you wrote a book about these emerald tablets, and Thoth did all he could trying to help you with that. And then you come into this whole schematic of how that is, and you didn't have a problem with it then, so why is it a question now?
Well, I was to say I didn't fully absorb the message we wrote, because we are in Egypt, in the future, in Atlantis, all over the place, and we're creating it all because that is the fact. Mm-hmm. And you realize that.
Yeah, it's almost like once you know it, your mind is there.
Yes. And then once you can, okay, Bob, did your bowels move today?
I think so this morning, yes.
Okay, that's good. Now, you don't even have to think about that. You know that, correct? Okay. Once it becomes part of your knowingness, it doesn't excite and thrill you. But now, if you get constipated for about a week and then you go, you'll be very appreciative of that experience.
Yeah.
So, it's that fullness, the fullness of time. They talk about that, the fullness of time.
Yes.
Well, why is it full? The reason it's full is because there's not any. But then you speak of others and I say, oh, you're just full of it. Well, yeah, you're full of it for sure. But the dynamic of separating, is this pre-bowel movement or during bowel movement or post-bowel movement? You don't think about it that way. You enjoy food that you consume for your digestion and then you eliminate it. Okay? But you don't think about, well, some people do, but we don't suggest it, but some people engage the bowel movement the second that they're putting it into their mouth. Oh, I can't eat that. That's going to give me indigestion. Oh, I can't eat that. It's going to upset my stomach. Oh, I can't eat that. That's going to hurt me. Oh, I can't have too much of that because that'll stop me up or that'll make me run like a sieve or on and on and on. And even your children back in your day, if you don't behave, I'm going to give you a dose of castor oil.
Yeah.
Well, why would they do that? But yet that was punishment. Or if you have any stomach ailment, castor oil, that'll do the ticket. You know, you might as well give them a quart of citrus of magnesium and let them go with it and see what happens.
So, it's the images that one has of oneself that are the metaphors and the limitations. And if you...
Or completion.
They can be the completion.
Yes, because you could start beating the drum up. I'll fly away and then fly away. You could start beating the drum up, I'm going to get killed in my bed, and then you'll be killed in your bed. Oh, I'm going to get in a gang fight, and the gangbangers are going to shoot me in the head, and I'm going to check out.
Right. Now, when people,
that's the same topic, isn't it?
When people start thinking that their thoughts create their own reality, they actually get nervous and say, well, what do I, if I think something...
Yeah, take it back. Redact.
Razor head.
Unplug it, Carolyn. How do I unplug it? I've thought the thought. It's typed. It's in the Android me. Oh, my God. The creator's going to get a hold of it. It's over. Oh, no. Carolyn, how in the world did you let me? Why didn't you tell me if I think this thought that that's going to become part of my reality? Why didn't you tell me that if I push against every single thing, that's what I get anyway, by default?
All right.
Why didn't you tell me this? And then I would have never thunk that thought. Then I'd have been much more careful with which thinking thoughts I allowed to be thought.
Okay, but that is 3-2-1. You think a thought, and then you go, uh-oh, it's already here. I didn't want that, and that's wanting it, okay, redefining it. The best way to bypass that constant anxiety about the quality of your thoughts is to relax, allow, and not think, or just
wait a minute now. Not everyone engages it that way, you see. The Christian faith, they have the hope of glory. That's why they're able to endure this less than place in their creation. It's because if we're good, and if we don't sin, oh wait, everybody sins. Okay, if we discover we're lost, then we can find a Savior to come and live in our heart, who's non-physical, and we can allow our sins to be forgiven, and we can forgive others, then we can cohabitate with other human creators, and then heaven will be our goal.
That's what they think themselves into.
And it works.
Right, but this issue of being superstitious about your thought, and you just hammed it up there and replayed the way the human goes through it, how do you bypass that anxiety?
You don't. Why would you bypass the anxiety? The contrast is the only thing that moves you into the excitement of the deliciousness that is.
So you think a thought, and it's good it's a negative one, because then it'll show up and give you contrast, and then you know that...
Yeah.
How can humans regenerate their bodies? How can they actually grow younger instead of older?
That you do it already. You do it already. Eat, drink, eat anything, eat everything. Eat everything. Have no restrictions or any regard about anything. But here's the trick. Here's the trick. You can't make a big do about it. You can't listen to them tell you that red wine will kill you, and you drink red wine and believe it, and live long, thrive, and prosper. Okay? You got to leave what everybody else thinks about it out of it. If you crave white sugar, enjoy white sugar, and every spoonful of white sugar you bring into your body, be only great, wonderful words for how delicious and fabulous and wonderful that sugar is. Okay? And then your body has no choice but to respond in kind. All right, now,
as far as how your body is already regenerating. You don't have the same lips that you had when you were born. You don't have the same bum you have when you were born. You don't even have the same toenails that you had when you were an adolescent, okay? So it's a constant regeneration process. Allow your body to naturally replicate the joy and only the joy that are the words that are coming out of your mouth. Love and appreciate your body. Speak often of how tactile and how wonderful your body moves. Speak often of how you feel well, that you have an inordinate sense of well-being. Then your mind says, okay, he's all screwed up. He's 109 years old, and he looks like Jack LaLanne. Oh, wait, that might be an example there. Now, mightn't it be? You come into a place where you allow your body to do what it's always been willing to do for you.
Collected ringers is replaced by your H-197. Now, don't you find it odd that in all of creation, the cloud inclusive, that every single mention of a wipe of H-197 has been removed from every canon and canticle that the whole wide world can look for? There's nothing, nothing hidden before a human creator in the world. And yet, through an hour's looking on the look on the looky box, and the only reference of 197, H-197, is from little old us, well, fiddle-dee-dee.
Yeah, because I'm sure when we first started talking about H-197, I was finding it on the internet. So, yes, I hear you.
You found it when you were trying to parse out deuterium.
Mm, okay. Yeah.
If you do that, then you're in big notes.
Yeah.
In the Carolyn Big Book Word of Knowledge.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Hey, Carol. What was that bit about losing it? Now, I bet that there was muffled. Cesium, selenose. There was a sentence about selenose.
That what they found was a cesium iodine. That's all they could find from Fukushima or purple.
Mm-hmm.
And that the reference of it changing the atmosphere. But see, even now they are saying that your carbon dioxide is at 400 parts per million, which is just unheard of. So everything is, it's already done. It's kicked. It's done.
What's already done? What are we referring to?
The atmosphere has changed.
The atmosphere has changed. So what Ion was saying, cesium and iodine, I got an unsolicited email from a health physicist who was saying, well, you know, iodine-131, it's not toxic. He said in the first 7 days, maybe, if you're within a mile. But, you know, after that, it's not. So, and he's working with the government, I'm sure. But, you know, I hear what he's saying, and it's almost like it's either becoming less radioactive now, just all
you're becoming more susceptible. Remember how many parts per million that it used to be that the radiation that would kill you?
Uh-huh.
And they had that much and nobody died, and they had that much and nobody died, and they had that much and nobody died.
Yeah.
They keep having to raise the standard because you're already grass growing in a cow pasture already has more radiation than they say would kill you.
That's right. Yeah. So it's shift. I mean, that to me implied a new environmental shift. That.
But don't make this a thing now. Don't make it a thing. There's enough of them going to go. They can't dig a hole big enough to put the graves in, to put the bodies in.
Yeah.
It's coming. That, mm-hmm. Don't worry about it. Don't be the message bearer regarding that. It is. Let
mm-hmm.
it be.
Mm-hmm.
You're there for the ones that are living.
Yeah. And for me, it's always been about getting it, you know, getting a little correlation and then just say, okay, fine, and then moving on. So that was my correlation there. So that was good.
Good. And right now, there's more.
Yeah?
Go back to the Red Sea.
Uh-huh.
We discussed specifically the Red Sea.
Yeah.
We discussed specifically the direction the curtain was going to come from Australia. We were very precise about that.
The carbon is coming from Australia?
Yes.
You remember that, Bob?
I remember the Red Sea in near India.
Coming this way.
Yeah, okay.
Does that something to do with carbon, Cal?
No, it will. But the answer is it will. If they don't know it, they won't say it, but it will. You're shifting, you're creating the essence of what you call the perfect storm. Don't you find it odd, since the winds have been blowing, that this has been the absolute calmest tornado season on record?
We haven't looked, but we, you know, very good.
We would if we were you.
Okay. Interesting.
Well, we find there's nothing there, but you're saying that's the calm before the storm?
Do.
So radioactivity will kill people, but not those on the RNA drops? That's what you're saying?
Correct.
Right. But you were saying that we're getting more immune.
You're getting more, yes, because you're breathing, you're changing the atmosphere. You're making it so the human creatures can live in this and stay. You have changed that. Otherwise, they couldn't.
So the few people that are on RNA drops, are changing the whole world, the whole atmosphere. Right? The few people that are on the drops are changing the whole atmosphere of the Earth.
They already have.
They have. So what is it now? It's Sheila's painting? It's the formula on Sheila's painting? Al2, AlSO4, that long formula? We've arrived at that now?
There is evidence that would say so, yes. But you don't believe things until the one that wrote the reading wrote writes the reading right.
Well, I don't believe in the writer, so
you can't say that it is until it is. Well, she says and has presented that it is, so therefore it must be.
She? Is that Sheila or Caroline?
It is. Sheila presented it.
Yeah, painted it.
Yeah, she didn't write it. She painted it.
So that makes it
Raven. A graven image is much more valued than any Gutenberg cluster gumption that you could bump up against.
Right. Okay.
No one questions the sincerity of Mona Lisa, Bob.
They do question all the writers.
Yeah.
Okay, Carol.
Okay, next we had a question about connecting brain neurons. Do you remember what that was?
Our chiropractor, Michael, who's on the RNA drops a little bit, he brought him a new bottle, a week ago or so, and he held it and did his muscle testing and psychic. He looks like he acts like a medium.
No.
Does this little thing. Here's what he said: they're connecting brain neurons.
Of course, that's the amino acid connection. That's the pathway. That's the labyrinth of the mind. How brilliant! He must have listened to your recordings, Bob.
No, he hadn't. He claimed he hadn't. But here's the thing: he said if that's true, that would get at the heart of aging. You're connecting your brain.
No time, so that's right. It would undo what your mind does to you when you start falling off of you. When you come to the place where you realize you don't have the same parts of your body already anyway, this mess of aging, this geriatric genre, is ridiculous. Look at people now that are 80 years old, and they look like they're 50, because they don't buy that mess. And that has to be out of some puffery. It's about the normal how you process in your exact body. Get happy or get the fuck out. That's what we say. That's the end of the story. If you're happy, stay. If you're not, get out. After that,
okay.
Puffery.
After that, puffery. Connecting brain neurons, is that something that we would say to other people, or is just idiosyncratic to his way of being impressed?
We already have within the defined definition of the labyrinth of the mind, but hell, we did that with Ray Land 100 years ago.
Yeah, but this phrase, connecting brain neurons, is that what we've been trying to find that phrase all along and understanding what
our... Never, never, never. We say never mind. we could give a flip about what you do with your mind. It has been a great disservice to you so far.
Oh, brain neurons are part of the mind.
Oh,
okay.
It's the labyrinth. It's the labyrinth that's entangled you all up. It's what convinced you that you were falling from your God state in the first place.
Well, we know. Okay, we got that. So connecting brain neurons is only one-tenth of the descriptors of what RNA does.
You could say the same thing with chromosome 14 in the labyrinth of the mind, how it embraces that whole process, the arms and the rings. It's making full circle with the RNA back to have your mind so it autonomically responds, so it connects it back up. You've taken the ship and ripped all the guts out of it. It won't sail. Now you're hooking the sails back up. When you hook the sails back up, the ship goes. Then it becomes a godly vessel that can ravage the open sea.
Nice. Okay. Next one.
Bob is an artful dodger today.
Well, he's trying. He's muting and unmuting. He keeps on blipping his phone so he won't have feedback because he wants to sit beside me.
Yeah. I'd like you to say the opening statement that you asked Alan. Now it's quiet in the background. Can he restate the very opening topic? Cesium and iodine, these two things. Is that, you start off?
Yeah, you start off by saying ion H197 is on the chain and drops down to lead and iridium.
Do that. Look up your isotope of hydrogen. Or you can just look at it as you pop down from mercury to lead, straight down. And you come back up the chain to cadmium, iridium, and all those, so the cesium and all those different ones, all the way back up to your hydrogen H197, which has that isotope.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
But apparently it's all been undone except for what we say about it. So apparently what we say about it is the only words that is.
Mm-hmm.
Does that count? What are the only words?
The only words it is are what Ion has said about it, because everything else has been undone. It's been lost on the internet. Gone.
No, there's...
Taken away.
The only words in H197 is what Ion's talking.
Correct.
Yeah.
Now, apparently. But in Carolyn's clip notes, she has all those footnotes for all of those, for all of the diagrams, for the dodecahedron, even the amino acids that fall into the predication parts of how that connects to the cellate, how it changes the amino acids in the level of the insect body. Lysine. Did we mention lysine?
Mm-hmm.
Real critical. It's in that spot. Because it was very dynamic at that moment for the alchemy part, when you were doing the alchemy hour, to find how this actually comes together
mm-hmm.
without the blessing of William Irwin Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go.
Okay, so the lysine. Now, we have lysine in our barley, as I understand it, so that's where the dynamic of lysine comes in, correct?
Yes, but it's also, remember, that's how you connect these chains.
These chains of isotopes or of super sugars?
Yes.
Of both.
Yeah, remember the details on the conjure sacrifice. Conjure sacrifice. Remember, you have to break the chains.
Oh, yeah. You have to die before you can live again.
Well, no, you got to take dying out of the process. So
yeah.
If you did, there's nothing else you got to do. And if there's nothing else you got to do, then you can get on with it.
Okay.
Did you say conjure or sacrifice?
Conjure of sacrifice.
Okay, so tell us more about that. Breaking the chains.
Yeah, we've gone that specific. Breaking the chains. The chains that bind. Yeah. And that's even on our YouTube station.
Oh.
So it's not like it's a great big old secret.
Okay, so lysine is active in that regard. So why don't we have lysine in our Realign product?
You don't require it. That'd be like adding extra eye cells. They're already there.
Yeah. So that's, as I understand it then, the lysine is there in barley, and we just didn't, we keep on enhancing it even more in our RNA drops.
Well, you're actually using it in the way lysine was supposed to be used in the first place, in the activation of the rings and arms and the amino acids in the lipid system, the lipid system. You thought you're going to get out of that lipid system. No, 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 ma'am. Not 1 second. It's right back on, right back when the original words were. Not one word has been changed. Not
right.
One.
Right.
Been
right.
Developed, been enhanced, but not changed.
So there's something that lysine does to the nucleic acids in this process?
It is. It's the single tree that allows the peptides bond.
Yes. Are you saying the H197 all that information was deleted from the internet since we showed up?
But if you look for an hour for something on the internet and couldn't find it, you're either an idiot or it's been removed.
They used to be able to find stuff on it, Cal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so lysine, now when you say it allows the peptides to bond, the peptides are protein. They're not the nucleic.
That's correct, but that's what you're trying to hook up. You're trying to bond. You're trying to merge together that protein. When you rip, you know, when you build a muscle and you rip and shred, then your body digests protein. You want to change the carb level balance.
Mm-hmm.
You want to have enough juice or oil to make this system work. But when you're ripping and then having the muscle to hold moisture or water, which the shredding is what pumps it up and makes a memory that your body is approaching, this is that part. That's the connection between the protein and the muscle mass within the amino of the muscle, which has everything to do with the lipid system, not the other way around.
Yeah.
HGH works because it allows you to process a different kind of hydrogen. That's why it works.
HGH, human chorionic, human growth hormone?
Yes.
Okay. A lot of people.
Many moons ago.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. So then the lysine.
With your luteus maximus.
Yes. Understood. So with the lysine, yes, that's the amino acid, the function there that acts on the proteins making the perfect cells, but earlier I said, does it act on the nucleic acids? And you said yes. So did you mean the more the amino acids?
Oh.
Okay.
Oh, once you're in the lipid system, then it becomes systemic. And that's the point.
Yes.
You want to merge this all as one, not individual pieces and parts.
Yes. Okay.
But you want the system all together, and it's almost like you want everything booted. For example, you want the before you start putting the Cracker Jack clear and start doing electromagnetic or electroshock therapy to restart a heart, you want to get the body in a good position to do it. You wouldn't want to do that in water, you see.
Yeah.
So all you're doing is prepping the body so it can receive the real unction, which is back to God. You want to die as a human. You don't want to be human. That's ridiculous. Why would you stay in a little man state? You're trying to get back to God, and that's what this is all about. You can call it just whatever the hell you want to, but at the end of the day, it's you coming back to your place of Godship. And some of that is cranial intercourse, and the rest of it just is. You either come into it or you don't. Just pretty easy after a bit. And we can give you everything under the sun, moon, and stars to validate it, and your words are what they're going to use to say, oh, this is how we retrieved an enlightened position. Yes, this is what we were told since before the beginning of time. Well, exactly. And that's
good.
What is all that he's talking about? What's killing us?
your mind.
He's saying forget the chemistry.
No, we're just saying explain the words are what you want to tell the people, but it won't make any difference. But when they're trying to figure out how it is, that's the point. They're still barking around shells trying to figure out. You have people, you have no idea, the people that are moving heaven and earth trying to figure out what it is you have in your RNA in the first place, Rebob.
What are they doing? I'd like to have a few examples. Are they taking to the lab?
Every chemical analysis under the heavens pretty much has already been done, down to spectrographs, down to everything.
And what do they see? What confounds them?
Nothing.
Because the eye cells are nothing.
It is the people that are not.
The eye cell is.
Yes.
Okay.
If it's a little man state, you can't recognize it. You're little.
Okay, that was the thing. Are there people? Some people told me they are taking these recordings and trying to hear what the background voices are saying to figure out where JW is. How are they doing with that?
It varies.
Awesome. That's a great recording, Bill. Great selection. What do you think of that, Carol? That's spelled out, reviewed the lipids and lymph nodes and some other stuff. That's very good. Are you there, Carol?
Yep.
Did you hear what I... Hey, put your mic down. I
have to unmute, too.
You caught that. That's pretty good, eh? Pretty good stuff.
Yeah, that was a fun section there.
Yes, very good, Bill. So, everybody's here. I'll just make this statement. We were out with our grandkids, had to do some stuff, went in the submarine, went underwater, went around the Maui Bay. But on the way back, there was an accident, and so we were blocked for an hour or so. But when the traffic
cleared,
I called Bill and said, maybe you heard on the air, it's going to take at least 25 minutes from where we were. We got home in 7 minutes. Just a perfect drive, but we kept saying, wait a minute, how did we get here already? Then how we got here? Then we got here. We actually did the old Brian Johnson parallel worlding something. You can't get from where we were over by Lahaina and get over to Wailea. You can't do that in under 25, 30 minutes. We got here in 7 minutes, guys. And what was interesting, you don't notice any of it. You just sort of go along, oh, we're here. And you go along another minute and a half, oh, we're here. Well, geez, how'd we get here? So we had a pretty good experience. So probably Ion caused the accident so these kids could have that experience. So there they are, because they're connected to Bob and Carol a little bit. They had a unique car otherworld experience. So I will now unmute everybody, and you can all celebrate in this fact. Okay, there's Chad. There's Jermaine. And there's probably Yuri. Then there's Katie. And,
hello.
Block. Hello, Katie. How you doing? Great to have you back.
Thank you.
Let's see, there's another blocked, and then there's another block. So maybe say who you are. We'll go through. We got Chad. Maybe Kate C is the other line. So please say your name so we know who's who.
And me, Jermaine.
Yes, I did say your name, Jermaine. So Jermaine's there. Who else?
Hello, I'm here. This is Kate.
Yeah.
And Chad, you,
right, there's Katie. What about Chad? You going to say anything, Chad? Your number's here.
Yeah,
what's Chad doing, Katie? Okay. And then Sean's over in England, but she doesn't have anything to say right yet. We're just bringing in the staff. Did I leave someone else off? Yuri's on there. Okay, I have some major things to bring up today. And anybody have anything to say about what you just heard? Was it good, useful to hear about the RNA drops and how the labs are trying to figure out what's there and they can't do it? Anything to say about that, rehearing that?
Yeah, I was listening to the tablets. I've been listening to the Emerald tablets lately. I'm on 7,
yeah.
Reviewing all
right.
of them. So that was good to hear. I heard something about the tablets in the recording.
cold.
Yeah, but yeah, you heard something. Well, what about the lymph nodes and the way the drops work? Did that sink in?
Not that much, because I kind of don't understand all the terminology. So sometimes that's hard for me to understand.
You just have to look up the way.
I was looking up lysine.
Yeah, you look it up, you write down what it says or note, then you look up lymph nodes, you see what it says, and then you re-listen and it'll tell you what it is. It's pretty straightforward. So, do you have anything to say about your travels, or is that all confidential?
No, it's not. It was great. It was really good. Everything turned out great, like magic, especially Costa Rica.
Did you get some issues solved?
A lot of them, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
So the property that I own, and Ion had talked about, who gave it to me. In Costa Rica, there's a bank interested in building their facility in that land. So I'm going back in February and seeing if it's one of Costa Rica's bank. It's called Popular Bank. And then if everything goes through, I'll be a landlord to a bank. So that's pretty cool.
They will use your property, rent from you.
So yeah, they'll pay me to use my property.
Great. That's pretty good.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's Yuri. Okay.
And,
go ahead.
No, what's so funny right now, I was saying earthquake, just because I was saying earthquake, I walked in and I was like, great, Jack leaves all his stuff all around, I'm going to call him earthquake. And I was saying earthquake, earthquake. And my sister texted me like 2 minutes later and she's like, did you guys feel the earthquake? And I said, no, I said, but I created it just for you. Like 5 minutes after I kept on saying earthquake. So I'm
And that's when you got back to L.A. or where did this happen?
Just now before I called you guys.
Oh, okay. So Jack is there now?
Yeah, he's here.
Right. Okay, Kate, do you have anything to say? That's Kate in British Columbia.
I just like how Ion says, get happier, get the fuck out. Because every time I hear that, I remember that I want to stay here because I do not want to get the fuck out, so I'm very happy. That's it for now.
Okay, so have you noticed the black students and black protesters, they have a sign, Black Lives Matter, and they've made some kind of impact. They've become an issue during the campaigning. If you guys, everybody's heard about them, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think we should up the ante and have Inets or anybody who's interested out there saying "My life matters" or some slogan they can come up with. And we got to start making noise like the black kids are doing, and start talking about the RNA drops and the other stuff we do, the remag, and just become a nuisance in the media as a put-on. If the black kids can do it, then why can't we do it? So I'm urging you people to get out there, and the theme would be we're getting a lot of 75, 80-year-olds, 90-year-olds on Carolyn's Monday show going through incredible health transformations and declaring it on Carolyn's show. This is unprecedented, such old people supposedly actually having new lives. We need to start bugging people, demanding Trump to deal with this and become as much of a nonsense as the black kids. Granted, the certain authorities would like to have racial antagonism, so they favor making an issue out of the racial tensions. But we should start making these signs ourselves and getting out there at campaign rallies and saying, maybe you would say, my grandmother's life matters. Please legalize RNA drops. Please make RNA drops mandatory. You can say, my life matters. And Another good slogan would be, nobody gets out of here dead. Instead of the old line, nobody gets out of here alive. That's not true, right? So we're going to say, nobody gets out of here dead. And let them figure out what it means. So I'm asking you people, the young people, whoever that's into this show, to start making a nuisance out of yourself in the media. I used to advocate this in the 80s. People get out there and make signs or call up talk shows and say, yeah, if you want to solve anything, turn off TV. Well, nobody that I know of did it. But you guys don't have the alibis. We've given you an activation of your eternity. You guys can stay here forever. You got to show a little gratitude. So you guys should start making noise. Turn your life into fun. Make yourself part of the election campaign. And if you see people getting ready to shoot you, run, hide, or act tough. Whatever it takes that you didn't expect. But I think why can't we make a nuisance campaign? Start going into the UCLA, all you people in L.A., go into the UCLA library. Start marching around saying, my life matters. Nobody gets out of here dead. and help my grandmother. And, you know, say REMAG or ICEL. ICEL for everybody. Why not? What do you got to lose? It's harmless. You're not violating the law. You're allowed to interrupt libraries, apparently. At least if you're black, you can. So get some black buddies. Yeah, it'd be good to get Califia. Call up Califia. Get Califia to come out here with us. You know, she'll scare people. She lives in Los Angeles. I don't know where she is. I haven't talked to her in a couple of years.
You can give me her contact so I can try and get together with her since we're in the same area.
Let's make a slogan. Califia's life matters. And she's going to have to deal with the fact that she's going to see on the news everybody making a big deal out of her life. You can start naming individuals. Chad's life matters. Chad does not get out of here dead. He's stuck here. So he requires eternal health, which he is getting. And he'd like you to have some, too. So that's the first matter before the board here. Now, what's causing all these little clickings? Watch your mute yourself or don't make noises. Okay, the second thing is, this is a book called Rock in America, but it's R-O-C-K apostrophe N America, so it's like rock and roll, but it becomes Rock in America, that apostrophe N. But it can be a pun on Rocking America. And it's a social and cultural history by Dina Weinstein. Dina Weinstein is the widow of Michael Weinstein, who passed a few months ago, went somewheres. And Michael Weinstein did the great book with Arthur Croker called Data Trash, subtitled A Theory for the Virtual Class. So that they've updated Marx and Engels' analysis of things 150 years ago. So they attempted to deal with the increasing virtualization of society and the elites, and they did this the year before everybody got online, before Netscape, 1995. So they're way ahead of the game. They talk about the post-information society, everything that you might have heard here, they laid out in 1994. So his widow is a sociologist, teaches at DePaul University, DePaul University in Chicago. So there's been many books on the history of rock and roll, history of rock, and I don't know why she decided to do her history, but I read it and it's pretty good with some basic stuff. She ticks off the main points in the history of pop, rock, and everything else. And makes them, it's a good sociological history. And let's see, in the late 60s, when FM became available, what was rock and roll, so you had rock and roll in the 50s, then Jerry Lee Lewis, he got in trouble, they stopped him because he married his 13-year-old cousin, they put Elvis in jail, Army, and they stopped a few other guys and basically stopped the momentum of rock and roll, which was like 54 to 57, 58. And then they did the Bobby V's, the Bobby Vintons, and sanitized rock and roll. They did away with Alan Freed. accused him of payola. They didn't tell anybody that payola was legal back then. She does a good explanation of that. Have you ever heard of payola? In people giving DJs gifts to get their records played. You never heard anybody tell you that it was legal to do that. But they wanted to control rock and roll. So they brought in the Bland period. Then that got shaken up by the Beatles. And then you have this period, 64 to 68, where folk rock came in and Dylan and a few other things and stuff coming out of Los Angeles. And as a result of that, by the late 60s, it developed, rock and roll developed into variations of the word rock. You had blues rock. That would be Paul Butterfield Blues Band. He was, picture of him is on Zappa's first album, Freak Out. He was pretty good. And then there was folk rock, that's the Byrds and a few other bands, popularizing Dylan. Then there was psychedelic rock, that would be Jefferson Airplane World out of San Francisco. Then there was country rock, started to come in. And then there was hard rock, and then southern rock, which I think was the Allman Brothers. So it was all these different rocks happened. In the late 60s, early 70s, according to her history. And then it got corporatized a bit in the mid-70s, and these big enterprises, Emerson, Lake & Palmer, Genesis, Pink Floyd, and these bands did this thing. And then the next generation came along, and they didn't like this arena rock. It started to become what they called arena rock, and so the punk rockers out of New York and London got back into short, 2-minute songs, none of these long guitar solos that progressive rock and corporate rock was presenting. And so that changed the music industry. And then disco came in too, and then techno wave. And then it went into another kind of corporate rock in the 80s. And she goes through the details, a lot of statistics showing you how much the record labels really started to make huge profits in the 80s, huge profits. And then there was a crash in the early 90s, and Kurt Cobain came forward with grunge rock, and that was a movement for a while. And then by the late 90s, that was the peak of the corporations making huge millions of dollars, billions of dollars in the rock industry, with ups and downs in the previous 15 years. But when Napster and the digital revolution started to take over, that caused disruption. And so by 2003, the record companies were really losing money in all kinds of cases. So between the last chapter is called Rock in the Digital Age, and this is 2003 till now. The corporations decided to not sign up any new groups and only recycle the famous classic rock guys. So they actually, because people were sharing, file sharing and MP3ing, all this stuff, nobody could make any money off of radio or rock or disco or all the different kinds of music. And so the corporation said, okay, let's go on the road. And they forced the Rolling Stones and Led Zeppelin, these guys, to do these huge mega tours. And the record company started making the most money they ever made, not from albums. They hardly made albums. They didn't use radio rock anymore. Then the indies, they were developing, the indie labels were developing in the early digital phase in the 90s. They went up and down for a while, but by 2008, they had their own festivals, Lollapalooza and a bunch of other festivals. And so you had two major phenomena going. You had the indie labels distributing their music by themselves and bypassing the corporations. And the corporations, the big ones, big record companies, were not signing up hardly any new groups. If they did, they didn't promote them. Dave Neufeld went through that with Broken Social Scene. And basically, if you had to get anything going, you had to get out there and tour. And it was incredible. For some reason, the baby boomers and the Generation X loved going to the old classic rock, arena rock. And so that was really big for the last, say, 10 years. Meanwhile, some indie bands were doing really well. So she ends up, it looked pretty bad for rock in the late 90s, and So I'm going to jump to the last chapter because it's pretty interesting. Just some particulars first. After talking about these big corporation guys, and she talked about websites like Pitchfork and others where everybody started reviewing, anybody could review, and so the professional critics, they were sort of sidelined, and everybody was getting to have their say over the last 10 years. Then her second last chapter says, even more variety. Indie rock has not been the only alternative to classic rock. Bands from a variety of other genres and subgenres that emerged in the 1990s, like Nickelback, she calls that post-grunge, post-Seattle. Green Day is pop-punk. Avenged Sevenfold is called metalcore. These different subgenres managed to be commercially successful. Young bands offering modification of far older genres, like the Black Keys playing blues rock in an unpolished garage rock approach, also have gained great popularity. An audience of omnivores, I'll have to look that up. She's calling music fans, rock fans, omnivores. Basically, they'll eat anything. An audience of omnivores, rock fans in the second decade of the 21st century confront an inexhaustible all-you-can-hear musical buffet. The offerings are familiar even when the music is new, so much so that some have seen the current era as completely retro. If legacy rock, that's the big old bands, famous bands of the 70s and 60s, they call that legacy rock. If legacy rock in digital format is like old wine in new bottles, another retro move is reusing old bottles for new rock releases. That would be the indie world. Since 2007, vinyl sales have climbed from less than 1 million to 6.1 million in 2012. Admittedly, vinyl accounts for a rising but minuscule proportion of all albums, but the numbers have been increasing steadily. Much of the vinyl use is created in small batches by melting down old vinyl records. Almost 75% of all the vinyl records sold in 2011 were rock albums. Most were bought at independent record stores, but even Amazon now has a vinyl record department. And there's a guy named Sandy Perlman. He produced Clash, Blue Oyster Cult, and a bunch of other stuff. He's now a fellow at the McLuhan Center in Toronto. And so we've been talking to him a little bit. But he's promoting the vinyl movement. So then you come into the last section. It's called Rock Lives. That's after many, many, many pages about how it looked pretty bad for rock. So it says, the period where rock got weakened, she calls that chapter decentering rock. Rock was no longer the main source of identity. I would add that the tactile texting kids were more into a post-music sensibility of just being doing whatever they could on their iPhones, iPads, and computers, and that's what attracted them. That would be the millennials. So Dina Weinstein says, after rock was decentered at the turn of the 21st century, its future was uncertain. It could have simply faded away like some other styles of popular music, although that was unlikely given its remarkable influence on several generations in the United States and in the rest of the world. Another scenario for rock would have rock taking its place alongside other forms of popular music, carving out its own shrinking niche. Something very different happened. Rather than being abandoned or pushed into a corner, rock expanded everywhere. Rock is alive and well in a state in which it has never existed before. As its center failed to hold, it penetrated an unprecedented variety of cultural forms and mingled with other styles of music on the one hand, and fragmented into micro-genres and as personalized as fingerprints in individualized playlists on the other. The present era, unlike the preceding ones, does not have a distinctive set of new genres that express a common sensibility, but there's more rock than ever, new and old, readily available to all. Rock is pervasive. It's in video games, advertisements, gyms, TV and movies, restaurants and coffee shops, and it permeates cyberspace. The new state of rock has been made possible by technological developments discussed in this chapter that have allowed rock to escape its previous boundaries formed in eras dominated by the major record labels, radio stations, and MTV. Oh, yeah, it had a whole section on MTV making the visual, taking over the audio in the 80s. So music went visual, but the indies retrieved the audio in the 80s. That's how the indies established a beachhead. Those developments, due to the technology developments, those developments have met an audience that goes beyond youth and has become adept at deploying the new technologies. Notwithstanding the dominance of music from rock's past, that's legacy rock, there are more rock bands in the present era than there ever were before. And there are bands playing in all rock genres and subgenres, and endless hybrids of them. Almost anyone can put music they have made on the internet to share with others, and many do just that. Rock songs coexist with songs from other styles of music, and songs from different rock genres are present in the collection that listeners put together on their electronic devices, or that Pandora assembles for them. What is lacking in terms of previous eras of rock are novel genres that catch fire and are taken up by major industry players that allow them to dominate the soundscape. That doesn't happen anymore. Rock is alive and well and multifarious. Although rock's history in America has not run out, it is no longer a marker of youth identity, defining an emerging generation. Indeed, many older people have not given up on rock. Rock is